But Mary was, and I worked hard and good. One of the reasons why we could save money was because I would do all this plastering and painting on the house, and we had two guys who were close friends. One was a painter, one was a carpenter. And both of those guys lived with us. Both black guys learned their trades in the South, or in southern Indiana. It was really South for one, and the other one learned the Deep South. And it was embarrassing to me how much help they gave us in doing all this work. But Mary worked right along with everybody else. And Mary would put in long days. I'd come home from work and work another 3 hours, 3.5 hours. She'd work right up to midnight with me. And so we could cut it financially with this kind of able cooperation.
Was this house really run down? Is that why you got it so cheap?
It wasn't terribly run down. An old lady, the last of 9 sisters, McInerney, they had, the family had, after the San Francisco fire and earthquake, had sold out in San Francisco, rushed to Oakland, and built this immense house to get away from the earthquake side of the bay. And it was built fine. I mean, with big timbers. And we didn't have 7 bedrooms when we moved into it. We added on 3 rooms. We added mine, each library for a study for each of us, and playroom for the kids, and all this business. And had 2 parlors with sliding doors up there. Had 11-foot ceilings. And we were driven out by reverse Jim Crow. And that is, we were the only white family on the block. And nothing was ever, no incidents with us adults, but Kim playing out on the block, someone, when she asked for a drink of water, age 3, gave her a scalding hot glass of water to drink. And there were a couple of times when she was hit, and we realized that, okay, for us, we can handle it, but this child doesn't understand why she's getting punished. And so we began to look around for a mixed neighborhood. And did find a place in a mixed neighborhood.
In Oakland?
In Berkeley. Where there was, Orientals, blacks, Mexicans, and was all around us. Right where Martin Luther King Jr. High is now, a block from Martin Luther King Jr. High. A block, 2 blocks off Martin Luther King Boulevard, which was then Grove Street.
Mm-hmm. Was, as you came to the North Bay, did Mary get a job up here, or?
Oh, Mary stayed right in nursery school work. And when the kids were there in Berkeley, when the kids got so they were in nursery school, Mary took half-time job, half-day, then in nursery school herself as a teacher, and started going back to school. And wound up getting her master's at Berkeley in early childhood education, and then started to go for a doctorate. She wound up getting a doctorate at University of Illinois, which we moved
later on.
We moved there to Champaign-Urbana in 1968, and she got, within a year she had a doctorate.
I just want to go back for a second, back to the neighborhood with the big house. Now, what were the majority of people in that neighborhood? What kind of workers were they, if they were workers?
All black families. Mm-hmm. And there was a nice church across the street from us. You could hear the black piano going 3 nights a week. Great stuff. Mm-hmm. My next door neighbor was a worked in an ice house. Had for years worked the same ice house. These guys were some worked for a Key System bus. One was a driver. One was a steamer that is used a steam gun to clean off buses. Worked in the yard. One was an automobile mechanic. Most of these people owned their homes. When we sold, they turned it into a rooming house for students at a community college on Grove Street, three blocks away. It's still there. Mary and I went by it 3 weeks ago.
What is the house now?
We couldn't tell. But the it's a brown shingle and two-story, and finally some of the shingles are disappearing.
So, and you got along fine with the...
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we decided to leave, the preacher and three other family heads came to us and said, please don't sell to blacks, sell to whites. We don't want this to be an all-black neighborhood. We want it to be a mixed neighborhood. You're the only whites around. And if you sell to... So we sold to Clinton Jinks, and they turned around and sold it 3 weeks later to blacks. And by the way, they really were going to move in, but their kids are both in high school, and when they finally presented the kids with a fait accompli, or the accomplished fact of moving, the kids said, we've never, a radical family, we've never been in one school longer than 2 years. At least let us finish high school and all be in the same one we've been in. And they realized that they had done this to their kids. And so they stayed there in Albany and sold off the house. Well, the guy who sold off the house was... Well, things happen with real estate people. It's that just the market is the king.
It's in Oakland, as in Los Angeles, if a black family moved into a neighborhood, did that start the white flight syndrome?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, one of the guys who was the worst was a black agent or broker whose approach was, he came to our house. He came to the door and said, you better move. They're coming.
These people in Oakland now, had black families moved into this area during the war, or were these
during the war? They've been there for quite some time. Uh-huh. This is North Oakland. Uh-huh. This is 54th Street between Grove and Shattuck. And in that area, in the flat part of town in North Oakland, it was just marginal enough that blacks had been buying homes there already for 15 years, since 43.
Were any of these, any of the guys you knew in the or living in the neighborhood, were they ex-servicemen or were...
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Sure. Well, as a matter of fact, a lot of the longshoremen lived in the area. Mm-hmm. None close by me, but a bunch of them.
When did you get into longshoring?
I applied in 58, and a year later, 59, June 59, I was accepted. Went to work.
What was your motivation for applying for longshoremen?
Get a good job.
Yeah, it was a very coveted job at the time.
It was doing something that I knew and liked. I was a skilled deckhand. I knew all the spices, knots, everything. And that's the only job I ever really liked that I ever had, was going to sea. This is the closest thing to it. And it pays well, you got a good medical plan, and at this point I'm more conservative. I'm not going in there because of the movement.
Mm-hmm.
The Independent Socialist League dissolved in 1956 into the Socialist Party. I could only stomach that move for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
By 57, I was out of politics, organized politics.
Mm-hmm.
In 59, there was no party
mm-hmm.
or radical socialist grouping that I was getting any kind of influence from in any direct way.
Mm-hmm. Were you aware at the time that you applied for at the longshoreman that major changes were on the way to the longshoreman industry? Could you?
No, I didn't really know. As a matter of fact, they're so new that they weren't even really talking about it much. We were the big change. There was no M&M agreement yet.
Mm-hmm.
They had one automation agreement that lasted for 1 year only. It was not M&M. It was called the automation contract. But there was no automated ships. There was one on the coast, the Hawaiian Citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going with containers up and down the coast.
Mm-hmm.
It's one ship on the whole coast. Madison had it.
Mm-hmm.
So no one was excited yet, and no one was ringing the alarm in the leadership.
Mm-hmm. That one container ship, were the cranes the same? Were the cranes unable to move containers around like they do these
unable?
Days? Excuse me?
You said unable?
No, were they able to move?
Oh, well, you had to have a hammerhead crane wherever these containers were going to be put on and off. One was in Alameda at the container dock there, which is right at the Encinal Terminal on the estuary. And the other place was Hawaiian Island.
Mm-hmm.
And the third place was the Matson Dock here.
Mm-hmm.
That meant three hammerhead cranes.
When were those hammerhead cranes? When was that?
Installed 58.
Mm-hmm. And those were that's the first real use of containerization that began in 1958.
Yeah.
And you didn't particularly foresee at that time that this was going to.
Well, in 59, when the negotiations began. I have been down there a little while, but it became apparent that this was going to be a biggie.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, the new M&M agreement was a negotiation, and I would go to the negotiations, the Goldfish Bowl negotiations.
Mm-hmm. Let's get clear what the M&M
mechanization and modernization, they quit calling it automation. Mm-hmm. They were smart enough that they knew that was bad
dirty word.
Yeah. So modernization is a positive term. And mechanization doesn't sound too alarming.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I wanted to, before we get a little further into this discussion, you were hired in and became a B book or B, what
would
you say?
I was registered as a B man.
A B man. Yeah.
We were not allowed in the union.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the big things.
Well, you paid union dues, did you?
Not the same as anyone. That is, there's no such thing as a set dues rate in the minds of longshoremen. You pay specific maintenance of the hiring hall fee. That's always the same. In addition, there are assessments for different things that come up from time to time. And the total bill for those assessments and fees is called dues. If you pay only the hiring hall fee, you're paying your pro rata share of the hiring hall maintenance. Now, they were charging us assessments when we first went down there until someone got smart and said, hey, if we charge these assessments, we're taxing them like members, but we're not following the need. Mm-hmm. So they ceased having us pay assessments, mm-hmm. and we just paid maintenance of hiring.
Okay, how long, when was this idea of this concept of having an A class of longshoremen and a B class of longshoremen, when did that start?
It came before the membership in 1957, and the membership voted against it. Mm-hmm. And Bridges, like he always did, dropped it for a while, and then came back at him again and said, just give us a couple of hundred. But the couple of hundred became a thousand. So they hired a thousand of us. They recruited a thousand of us, and 756 of us, I think, showed up and took jobs.
Was that, and that is the first, so you were within the first group of people who were hired in this B class?
In that court.
In that court.
There were trial courts, and we didn't know of that. Stockton being one of them, where there had already been B men and the same guys in the same category as B men already for 8-9 years.
The B men. And the B men were not allowed to participate.
No, not quite that long.
Uh-huh.
5 years, maybe.
5 years, so okay.
Already at that point.
But as a B man, did it surprise you when you became when you got involved that you were not allowed to participate in the union meetings?
Well, not at first. That is, it appeared at first as if B was simply a formalization of a probationary member. And we were told that the maximum that it would take for us to become A men would be a year, the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought that this was a minor change that was being made, sort of formalizing us in this status rather than in a regular probationary status. Then it began to appear that the M&M agreement was taking the right to recruit to the industry away from all the locals and was now controlling it at the coastwise level between Bridges and his top committee on the coast, and top ILW committee, and the top committee of the PMA, Pacific Maritime Association. So it was about then, about a year after we'd been down there, no, maybe not that long. Probably we'd been down there 6 months, and we saw that instead of a year, it might be much longer. That's when the men said, let's do something about this. At the executive board level, and we didn't know it, of course, it was the Bridges men who proposed that the B men elect their own representatives. Mm-hmm. And when they got elected, they knew who the guys considered the leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And they immediately began searching our record from the beginning of us three guys.
Uh-huh. Who were the other two people besides you?
William Davis Edwards, who was out of the Marine Cooks and Stewards and the Pile Drivers, and Robert Marshall, who was out of the Marine Cooks.
Were either of them black?
Both black.
Okay. Now, did you go to regular local 10 union meetings?
Yeah, but we had to sit in a segregated section of the balcony.
And were you allowed to voice your concerns about what was going on?
No. As a matter of fact, we were sitting there so that no one would ever recognize us to speak or vote.
Mm-hmm.
If we voted, they'd know that the hands in that section didn't count.
Did anybody from the regular ranks and file, A book, long-time longshoremen, did anyone say, hey, this is an undemocratic, or did you appeal or did you try to build a base amongst the... Amen.
Well, that was going on daily. And as most of the black guys, as a matter of fact, I would say probably 70% of all B men had a relative who was an A-man. And so that on the job, there was plenty of confrontation on this issue. there was nobody getting up and hitting the floor and protesting the treatment we were getting. In a closed shop union where the union controls the hiring, it's very easy for the union bureaucracy to get back at the membership that they impose them. That is, they don't get you at the next meeting or take a long time, they can begin to find you getting crap jobs. Things like that. And when you call a BA, BA doesn't come very fast. Things like that. So we didn't have any real backing. There were guys who were backing us quietly. Putting up that, what are you doing in the army when a whole platoon will let themselves be heard just loud enough for a lieutenant to hear their feelings. So they can't get in trouble directly, but the brass knows something is cooking and that their sentiment that's pretty strong. It was that kind of thing. When it was seen that they were going to fire, and here they are, it's 4 years later, 1963.
You'd been a B book for 4 years.
Yeah. And I'm the only rep left. They fired the other two guys within 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't live as careful a life as I lived. And, well, I'd never been through one of these things before. I'd been through one.
Mm-hmm.
And Bridges put out a flyer saying, we're going to give you guys a Christmas present. Come Christmas, 1962, we're going to start taking you guys in. And the local had already started to try to take us in after 1 year, just like they promised. And Bridges stopped it right at the top. Squashed it. Mm-hmm. They had an investigating committee and they were going through and interviewing at the whole business.
Mm-hmm.
And so here it was, Bridges is going to give us a Christmas present. Well, they okayed bringing us in, but then Bridges came to them and said, we want the right, my committee, Star Committee, not elected committee, the right to fire 100 John Does. Someone got up and said, you mean you're not even going to let us know who they are you want to fire? He said, that's right. And so they wouldn't give him that right.
Why did he want that right?
Well, that's hypothetical. They're hypotheses. No one can prove anything, but I'll get to that in a moment. The local union began to get us ready to initiate us, whether Bridges was ready or not. But Bridges was getting, it was obvious that the machine was going. They cleared, the local investigating committee cleared 375 or so.
Were you among that number?
And I was not among that number, and that's a separate little story. And in May of 1963, those 380 guys were sworn in, and Bridges jumped up and said, you can't do this. They said, what are you talking about? The Secretary of Treasury was Lionel Ercola, Finn, good guy.
And Bridges at this time is international.
He's international president like he has been from day one. But he always sits up on the stage at every single local meeting. And he jumped up and grabbed the mic, which he, little by little he had been given the right to do, and said, you can't do this. And I said, what are you talking about? Ercola said, I was up at the PMA today and your signature's on everything. They're in. They've got registration. And Bridges said, but that can be reversed. The next morning, these 375 guys went out as A-men. By noon, the reversal had taken place. The next day, they went out as B-men again, demoted. Mm-hmm. And he let it be known that that's the way it was going to be. We're going to keep all your sons and sons-in-law and nephews out until you give me the right to get the 100 bad eggs out. He told us, you're getting black marks all the time, and not just from the employer. The A-men come up and tell me what kind of guys you are. 40 minutes he intimidated this crowd. at a B meeting in the same period. When he had finished, I got up and said, I move that we open election for 3 more reps. 2 have been fired 2 years ago. Let's fill it out again and get 3 reps. Bridges was just going to sit down after he got done intimidating us for 40 minutes. He jumped back to the mic again and said, oh yes, you don't need any representatives anymore. We're representing you. Now, you know I have a good friend on the B list named Pat Tobin. And if you want any direction, go to him. And so, and guys, let's see, the guys were smart enough to know that this was shit time and better duck. And I looked around the hall and there wasn't anybody looking up. Everybody was looking at the floor.
Where was this meeting taking place?
In the hall, in the hiring hall.
In the hiring hall.
And special B meeting. Called for another reason than to discuss this matter. I don't know whether to go or not.
Well, what was the reason then?
There was a president of the local who ostensibly was stealing jobs, that is, out the back door, and selling the jobs in Butchertown.
What's Butchertown?
That's a segment of the Mission District, next to the Mission District.
It sounds like the old Blue Book, though, passing out jobs out the back door.
Well, but this was union, supposedly. We never saw any proof of this. Ercola said, geez, will you come and see me at my house tonight? Call me one night. And we were friends. And I said, sure. So I had L.B. Thomas there, who was a vice president on the Coast Committee. And Thomas, who's the next man under Bridges, tells me, look, we got this guy stealing jobs and selling with you and in your capacity as the leader of the B list, push attendance at this special meeting for B men night after tomorrow night, 2 nights from now.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I don't know what good, but you're going to send out a notice, aren't you? He said, yeah. And the notice turned out that if you don't attend this, you're going to get kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
Said, and I knew something was wrong right away. So Bridges opened the meeting without the president there. The vice president, who had no spine, was there. So it was going to be Bridges' meeting, and Bridges never brought up anything about the guy stealing jobs or any problem at all in the front for the hiring hall. He spoke for 40 minutes intimidating the big man, and I got up and made that motion, which he called out of order, and he wiped out of all offices for being in at that moment, and Walter Nelson, the vice president, said nothing. And so
before that time, what capacity the 3 representatives of the B-men, what power did you have as far as negotiating?
To go to the executive board of the local with any problems.
Mm-hmm. Even though you couldn't speak at meetings, you got to talk to the office.
But we were not allowed to speak at the executive board. Bridges, Star Committee guys.
Star Committee, was that a slang
name? Bridges had
name?
A group that was really a Star Committee that could usurp power. Tommy Silas and Smitty.
Was it called, Bridges didn't call it the Star Committee, did he?
No.
That's my term, our term down
on the B-list.
I wanted to get straight. The Coast Committee. What was the Coast Committee?
Coast Committee is the like the coast level of the unions of the longshore segment of the ILWU. There, that unit of the union's executive board. There are 4 vice presidents.
So Bridges and 4
Bridges,
vice presidents make up the Coast Committee.
Yeah, something like that. I may be a little off. It's changed somewhat.
What of these the B men? What percentage of the B men were black?
About 90%.
90%. Why?
88, 89, 90. No, wait a minute. No, that's wrong. 80% of those of us who were fired were black.
Mm-hmm.
80 to 90, more like 90.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's safe to say that at least 65% of all B men were black.
Mm-hmm.
How did Bridges go about getting people fired? How did this all happen?
Well, my case is instructive of the way things were operating. The local 10 of the ILWU Longshore San Francisco had been elected an investigative committee to investigate whether or not these are good or poor men that they're about to bring into the union and eliminate anybody who's got a bad record or done anything wrong.
Related to Bridges' insistence that he have control, that he have the power?
No, this is the local union's standard way of operating and investigating. And so my turn finally came, and I went before the investigative committee. Carl Smitty Smith,